Welcome to the Elemental Awakening. All right, welcome everyone. Gio here for another episode of Elemental Awakening. Today, a very special guest. His name is Steve Rio. He's the co-founder of Nature of Work and also a new project that he's launched in the last year or so called Enfold, which we're going to hear all about. So welcome, Steve, to the show.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, if you've listened to the podcast, I actually got introduced to Steve through a mutual friend of ours, Robert Bent, who is one of my favorite people in the world. And if you come highly recommended from Robbie, then I'm sure you're an interesting guy and very cool and have a lot of interesting things going on. And as soon as I met Steve, it was exactly as I thought. And I ended up diving into one of his programs, which is Nature of Work, which I'm going to get him to share with you guys. So, Steve, welcome.
Yeah, man. Happy to be here. And shout out to Robbie, who introduces me to basically everybody I know at this point.
Oh, Robbie.
Amazing guy.
Yeah, so why don't you start off by maybe giving us the backstory of what led you up to Nature of Work, and then you can get into what it is and why so passionate about it. Yeah. So tell us a bit about you.
I'll try and tell a long story short, but it usually ends up being a short story long. But basically, my background is tech. And communications, branding, like that's the work I've been doing for a number of years. Before that, I was a musician, and I did that until I was about 27. And then I started my first agencies and kind of got going in this space. I've always really been highly focused in social impact. So I'm driven by making people's lives better and making communities better. And so all of the work I did on the digital side of things and technology was all social impact focused, working with big foundations, nonprofits across actually basically internationally. And I think the other part of me that leads me to Nature of Work is just a deep focus on personal development, on personal exploration, on wellness, and on exploring this question of what it means to live a good life. I think I've been sort of philosophizing on that for a number of years and just, you know, really thinking about that, because I've always been a pretty hard driving entrepreneur. And I think over the last 5 or so years, started reaching that point where it's like, okay, I've made some money and that's great. But like, what's this all about? And why am I driving so hard? And is this really the right approach? And I think a couple things have happened that led me to Nature of Work specifically. One is that for a number of years with my agency, we were growing. We have people in 25 cities around the world. We were a fully distributed team. And we were, you know, using a lot of technology to communicate. And what I just saw over a number of years, the last so 5, 6, 7 years, is that as more and more technology came into play with our communications, anxiety, stress, distractions, all those things started increasing. And then I've also really been thinking about the impact on society of things like social media and the algorithm-based internet and the way that, yeah, the internet's kind of been co-opted by the attention economy. And that's been really impactful for me. I have a daughter who I adopted my wife's daughter when she was 13. And that's when I came into her life. And I watched her go through high school as really one of the first generations to be fully plugged in. And I watched the impacts of social media on her social skills and her brain and her well-being. And she's a great kid and doing great. And I think there was a lot of challenges around the way technology she interacted with technology. So that was another thing. And I think lastly, like I said, I've been a hard driving entrepreneur most of my life, and I've burnt out a number of times. And I finally reached a point where it was like, it's time to figure out there's gotta be a better way to work. No one really talks about it. There's some great books, but there's nobody's really introduced a system. There's no proper training for this. And I started researching it for myself. And as I started doing that, I'd have conversations and talking about it out loud with lots of people, and people were just clearly really interested in that. And so it started just evolving into what Nature of Work is today, which is a program that you can go through either on your own or through an 8-week cohort with a group of people and basically learn how to build better habits, build better routines, better just a better relationship with your technology, with your time, with your attention, so that you get a lot more done less stress. You have more free time for your friends and family and other things that are important to you. And you have a higher quality of life. So that's just been the work there. And we've been really having a good time with it.
Yeah, I loved taking your course and being part of the cohort with the weekly mentorship and accountability, which was helpful. And I see what you're talking about. I got two young kids as well that are always, you know, gravitating towards technology. You know, whenever a free chance, it's like, hey guys, go outside. They're like reaching for their phone or reaching for the iPad. And I know as a parent, you know, they like to mimic what the adults do. And when I sort of reflect and when we're around and there's nothing going on, you know, maybe we're on our phones or, you know, I'm 100%. Always on technology because I'm working, you know, I got that sort of workaholic syndrome. And I like to sort of sugarcoat that with, hey, I'm doing work that I'm passionate about and I'm helping people and all this stuff, but it's still a form of workaholism, you know, although it's inspiring to me, it's like out of balance for sure. Yeah. And they don't understand that when I try to tell them, like, yeah, but it's okay. Because so then for me, when I'm getting it from them, like, oh, but dad, one more, but like, there's always that sort of like trying to justify why a little bit more is okay. Mm-hmm. And so I find my own struggles. And so I think it's very noble and interesting and important sort of challenge you've been taking on with this new project. So tell me a bit more about Nature of Work specifically. So how did it come to fruition? And, mm-hmm. you know, like, how does it actually help people? Like, what is it like, just destroy your technology? Because for me, sometimes that seems like the only way that...
Yeah, it's just basically like a really fancy hammer and you just get the hammer and you smash the shit out of your iPhone.
Problem solved.
That would have been a way easier product to develop, actually. I should have just made the iPhone hammer. So first off, it came to fruition... it was interesting. I moved to where I live now, which is Bowen Island. It's a remote community outside of Vancouver. I have an office that I'm in right now. I have my own space to work from. I have total isolation. And when I first built this office, I was really excited. I was like, I'm going to do the best work of my life here. I'm going to be so focused this year. It's going to be amazing. And then I sat down at this desk and I kind of panicked because I couldn't focus. Like, I just realized I just built this beautiful environment for myself to work from, but my internal environment, what was going on in my head, my mental training, there was no such thing as mental training for me. And I didn't have good mental habits and focus habits. And like the digital environment we work in is a minefield, right? Like we are working out of a browser half the time if we're in Google Docs or email or other stuff. Like it's so easy to flip to a new tab and see what like Trump lit on fire this week or, you know, what the price of Bitcoin is or what's happening on Reddit or like what's, you know, the latest bullshit on YouTube, like whatever your thing is, there's a dopamine dealer in every tab. And so I realized that it was about my internal environment. And I started researching and I started reading a whole bunch of books. Then I started extracting the research from those books. Then I started compiling all these things and looking around and realizing that like there's a ton of good information, ton of good books, which are fantastic, but books often you finish the book, you're really inspired, and then you follow the ideas for a week and then they drift. And so I felt the need, I was like, I'd been reading about habit change and researching that as well. And I just started thinking like a program makes a ton more sense and something that people can actually step through. It gives them really specific ways to implement the research and the ideas, because there's the interesting thing is that there's honestly decades of good research about how to work properly. It's just not something we ever learned. We don't talk about it in high school. We don't talk about it in college. We really talk about being experts in our field, but not experts at the practice of work, right? Mm-hmm. It's the equivalent of like being a, being an athlete. Like, let's say you want to be a pro basketball player and all you do is practice the rules of the game and your jump shot. And like, you have the best shot of anybody of all time, but you don't work out. You don't actually know how to condition your body. You don't have any mental priming so that when the pressure's on, you can still hit that jump shot. It's kind of the same thing. That's kind of how we approach work. We become experts in our fields. We become masters of marketing or whatever we do, but we don't learn the practice of work. So that's what the program is about. And I'd say there's kind of, what we're finding is there's sort of three key areas where people get a ton of benefit. Like there's lots of nuance to this, but the three key areas, one is people who have like feel like there's a real issue around their technology. Like they just are really feeling like they're constantly picking up their phones without like kind of compulsively. They're constantly flipping to new tabs. They're just feeling very distracted by their technology. That's one. Two is that they don't feel like they have a structure to their workday, and they don't really feel like they feel like they're working really hard, but they're not getting much done. It's, you know, you get to the end of the workday, you feel exhausted, but you don't really know what happened. That's number two. Number three is that you have a problem disconnecting from work. So you don't really take breaks throughout the day. You do email at lunch. At the end of the day, you basically bleed into your work bleeds into your family and personal time. You wake up first thing in the morning and all you can think about is work, and you're on your phone within 2 minutes. Like a lot of people are finding this, especially now that more and more people are working from home, that the separation between your personal life and work is eroding. And so it's kind of those three key areas. And often people check all those boxes or one in particular. Some people have, you know, actually aren't on social and aren't, you know, super compulsive with their technology, yet they don't really have a good work rhythm and a good routine. So they're constantly multitasking and they're not getting a lot done. Or others are really focused at work, but they can't disconnect at night. And so they're sort of spinning their wheels and they can't pay attention to their kids, or they're not paying attention to their partners. They can't sleep well because they're anxious about things. So it's kind of all those different areas. And I think one of the biggest benefits that you get out of the program, besides like better work habits, what does that all mean? Like I'd say the bottom line is that you win back time. And most people come out of the program winning back at least an hour per day. If you follow the practices, I guarantee you'll get an hour per day, if not more, of new time, net new time. And that's a big deal in a day and age where we're constantly talking about how busy we are, right? Like, I feel like people feel like they're like a level, like a 10 out of 10 busy, when in reality, they're actually a 6 out of 10 busy. They're just leaving 4 on the table. You know what I mean? There's just by
and they don't know where either.
No, and it's really hard to pinpoint. Like my one of my co-founders, Yaz, and I were talking this morning, and we were just saying, holy shit, it's Thursday and we've both checked off our whole list for the week. And I've had 3 weeks like that, as I kind of really doubled down on my game as we came back into January. And like, you know, even everybody's natural, I fall in and out of the system. I'm not I'm working to master it, but it's a lifelong practice, right? It's like going to the gym. You go for a while and then you forget and then you get back. So I'm back. And the last 3 weeks, I've had my whole week done by Thursday. And I kind of feel like, holy shit, I feel successful. I'm going to have a sauna this morning, or I'm going to like go for a hike because I've got my shit done. And I'm going to get a few more things done, but I'm also not going to cram a ton more stuff in because I'm going to enjoy the balance I'm creating for myself, you know?
Yeah, I love that.
That's a pretty cool feeling. So,
and so like, I'm just curious, like for you, what does doubling down actually mean? Is it like deleting all your social media and like, you know, like is it just adding extra focus? Like, how would you define that? You don't have to give me specifics, but like when Steve doubles down.
Yeah. Like, so actually it's pretty simple. It's doubling down on my morning routine, which is being really clear about how I start my day. I find that if the first 30 to 60 minutes, and for me, my morning routine is 60 to 90 minutes, but even just the first 30 minutes or whatever of your day, if it's really clear and you're in control of it and it's kind of disciplined, that sets a tone for the day. And so my meditation game is strong. I'm doing these short breath works every day. I'm doing some stretching. And most importantly, I would say for me is I'm defining what my most important tasks of the day are, like what needs to happen today. So the second piece is like, and it's a practice from the program, is opening and closing my day, which is to, at the beginning of the week, I look at our broader goals for the quarter and I say, these are the 5 things that I can get done this week. And then on a daily basis, I'm looking at that list and I'm saying, I can go check this thing off today. And basically making a short list for myself each day. And I find that for me, because there is in our environment now of how we work, there's always a never ending list of things we could do, right? I know you're hustling, you've got all sorts of projects on the go. Like there's a never-ending flow of things we could be doing. I've got multiple ventures going, and I'm volunteering my time, and I'm making music, and so it's a never-ending flow. And that's really overwhelming. But when you narrow it down, you say, this is what's a reasonable amount of stuff to get done this week. And then each day you say, this isn't a reasonable amount of stuff to do today. Then your brain sort of seems to calm down and be able to lock in and do that thing in a way, in a much faster order. And so that's a big part of doubling down for me too. So it's actually, it's like, you know, obviously my technology habits are part of that too. I've recommitted to monitoring and keeping my time on what I call time wasters down, like the apps that just waste my time. Over the holidays, I sort of let my Bitcoin obsession like go nuts, because anybody who has crypto right now is like on a fucking roller coaster. A good checking. One. It's gone way up, and then it was crashing, and then it was up, and then but that's like such a, it's so crazy because our brain just gets hooked into these things. Now I'll say, like, I have some crypto. My plan is to hold it for at least the next 5 years.
But you're still checking every 45 minutes anyways.
Yeah. Like that's the sort of level of like our brain is doesn't know how to like, doesn't know better. Right. So we get into these dopamine habits and if I give that up, then my brain is looking for another way to get a dopamine fix. And so just being more mindful of those things. Like those are some of the areas where I've doubled down for sure.
Love it. Yeah. I love it. So I guess maybe, I don't know if sum it up is a good way to put it, but some of the key points of the nature of work is maybe relooking at a better way to sort of manage your work life or your life, where it's being more efficient, less technology, more organization, calming down the mental clutter and having more focus. Are those some of the things that sort of make up?
Yeah, absolutely. Like a big part of the program is the meta level sort of theme of the program is intentionality, is learning to be intentional about everything you're doing. So when you wake up or when you sit down at your desk for the first time of the day, do you jump on your email and just start responding to whoever has emailed you yesterday or overnight? Or do you sit down and say, the most important thing I got to do right now is go get that document done and ship it. Mm-hmm. And like, that's a choice you make every moment of your day, right? So a big part of that is learning to be intentional. And then the way that you reinforce that is by building routines and process and systems for yourself. So structuring your day out in a way that's most efficient for you, learning to take proper breaks throughout the day so that you actually, your mind can actually like kind of rest and digest all of the information you're taking in. Like basically looking at your whole day from the first moment you wake up till the moment you go to bed with a heavier focus on work habits, routines, structures.
And would you recommend like trying to focus on like one big thing at a time rather than like multiple things in a day? Or would you do like one thing every single day or try to focus all of that in one shot to keep, you know, one of the things I think that was interesting to me, I think it was from the book Deep Work, was when you start flipping between too many topics or ideas, you have this like residue where your mind is still halfway in one thought process and you're trying to go into the next. And I remember even up to recently, like I have a day packed with like all these different meetings that are totally different conversations about totally different aspects of the business. And I feel fried by the end of the day. And I feel like even some of those meetings, it's hard to focus. So, you know, anything you want to sort of articulate around that concept there?
Well, yeah. I mean, first off, you mentioned multitasking, right? And we talk a lot about that in the program. And what you mentioned there is this idea, this concept of attention residue, which was Sophia Leroy did a bunch of research on this and basically found that when you task switch, so first of all, people talk about multitasking all the time. Whenever we have job openings, I get a million resumes that say I'm an excellent multitasker. It makes me insane. But multitasking is not a real thing. What happens in the brain is it's like we have a single processing stream in our brain. So I'm talking to you right now about this topic. If my phone buzzes, even if I don't look at it, my brain stops what it's doing starts a new process to go, oh, I wonder who that might be. Or I wonder if that's a text from my buddy that I'm texting with, or is that an important email or whatever. Even that task switch, even if I didn't do anything about the buzz, I just heard the buzz, my brain interrupts itself, stops, and then goes over here, and then it starts back up and tries to reconnect with you, like reconnect with the thing you're doing, right? And that is like incredibly energy consuming. Like it basically is like just a very inefficient way to go about things. And attention residue shows that basically it takes up to 10 or 15 minutes to get deeply focused on a single activity. So if you're doing something that's important, you're writing something complex, or you're working on a piece of work that requires cognitive energy, it can take 10 to 15 minutes to get fully focused on that activity. So if over the course of half an hour, you are checking your email every 5 to 7 minutes, you are basically working at like 30% capacity for that whole 30 minutes. You are burning, like you're basically getting about, whatever, 5 to 7 minutes of real work done instead of 30. And so that's kind of like, it's such an important factor in terms of like, what's interesting when you think about that is not only does everything take longer, research also shows that the quality of your thinking and the quality of your work is lower. So that's not great, but it's also raising your stress markers. So you are burning more energy. You are creating more cortisol release in the system, which is a hormone released when you're under stress. You're basically taxing your body and your brain more than you need to be. And it's just a very inefficient way to work. So you get to the end of the day and you are absolutely bagged, right? Mm-hmm. And it's also really hard to kind of process things if you're in that environment. You're not really actually absorbing the things. Like the second piece you said there was about meetings. And I think it's really interesting because we bounce from meeting to meeting to meeting. And if we don't take, let's just say 2 to 5 minutes, that's it, after the meeting, and process what just happened, write a couple notes, maybe update something, figure out what the next step is in that interaction. Maybe there's a follow on or whatever. If we don't do that, we just wasted the time in the meeting because we're not actually digesting what just happened, right? So I think that's another really important thing, especially now that we're just in the Zoom zone where we're just on Zoom all day. And it's very, very easy to go to jump off this and jump on another thing literally within 1 minute. I think it's really important to build a little bit of time in for that.
Yeah, I love what you said there, especially about, like, for me, it's offloading things out of the back of my mind. So it's like creating processes and like writing things down. So it's not like I have to remember to follow up with this person. Now I'm on my next call. I'm like, oh, I don't want to forget about this. Or, you know, because for me, like so much is going on. Like when you forget one thing, then you're just like, oh, shit, there's something I got to do. I can't remember now. So it's like really important, I think, to take clear notes and finish every process. So you write down the things that need to get taken care of. I think that's a great tip and tool.
It's kind of intentionality, right?
Intentionality. Coming back to intentionality, of course.
Can we do a quick, do you want to do a super quick exercise to just test your multitasking brain? Like just to
show. All right. Yeah, sure.
I'll put you in the
hot seat. Put me on the spot. All right.
Yeah. But trust me, nobody wins this game. So it's
okay.
Just do this for me. Just spell the word responsible. Just spell responsible.
Responsible, R-E-S-P-O-N-S-I-B-L-E.
Yeah, nailed it. And I just want you to like count in twos from 2 to 22. Count out loud.
Out loud, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, 22.
Yeah, you did both of those really quickly, pretty darn easy. I mean, responsible, you got to think for a sec, is it an I or an A, or, you know, but you can do it. Now I want
I'm waiting for a trick question. That's what I'm waiting for. Like, are you asking me just to do this?
Here's what I'd like you to do now. I'd like you to spell responsible and count 2 to 22 interchanging. So R two.
Okay.
So just try that for me.
R 2 E 4 S 6 P 8 O 10 N 12 S 14 I 16 B 18 L 20 E 22.
Yeah. So you did.
Did I miss anything?
I think you got it right.
My brain almost fried in the middle there.
So what I'm interested in is how did that feel? Like, how did your brain feel while you were doing that?
It's interesting because probably about the O, it was just like, stick with it here, you know, focus. And then it was just like, I literally just like let go and just went into flow state and just like let it come out. Stop thinking about, don't worry if I make a mistake, just go with the just flow. Go. And it, as I gotta listen back how it sounded, because I felt like I just flowed through the end, but there was that middle part where I was really thinking hard.
Yeah, you're, in the middle, like, your brain kind of almost boils over. And actually, you did a lot better than most people do. Most people kind of break down around the P or the O, and it's not that they can't finish it, because we can do it. It just, you just slow down, and it, you just feel like this kind of taxing energy to get through that hump, because your brain is working very hard to do two very simple things, right? It's just an example of two very simple tasks that when you actually try to do both of them at the same time, it's not simple at all, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I have this weird thing. I noticed Robbie has the same thing, go back to Robbie, where like I'll get like super focused on something and someone will be talking to me and it seems like I'm completely ignoring them. And then a minute or two later, I'll respond to their question. Like, and they're like, okay, you totally ignored me, but you're actually listening at the same time. So there's something in my brain that's picking up the surrounding while I'm able to focus. And then it'll like respond like with a delay of a minute or two.
My wife does that to me too. And I get into that zone too. Like, we now understand each other enough to just, there's like a little head nod or something that happens. It's like, I'm not responding. I'm super in the zone.
It was funny because when I started working with new people that I didn't even realize, they started pointing it out to me where I look like super rude. Like, they're coming to my office and they're asking me a question. I'm just like, they're like pretending they're not even there. And then I'll just be like, if they left, or I'd answer them later. So anyways,
yeah,
that was a lot of fun. I want to ask you another question. Now that we're moving on from multitasking, what do you think the correlation is between all of this sort of dopamine dealership? I love that sort of as a dealer in every tab, and social media distractions and multitasking. Yeah. On overall mental health, because mental health is going, you know, we all know it's becoming more and more of an issue, and there's many different sort of, I guess, flavors of mental health, you know, that show itself symptoms in different ways in short and long term. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that all this leads to more stress, which leads to sort of mental health, you know. Mm-hmm. What do you think, like, how much is this work-related stuff attributing to the overall mental health issue? And I guess what I really want to chat about is the fact that the human mind has never seen this before. Like, mm-hmm. we're, for the first time in history, going through this sort of technology interaction with the human brain at a level that it's already beyond what's ever been seen before, and it's only going to get worse and worse. Like, I started using technology really probably when I was a teenager, mm-hmm. with my first cell phone maybe at 15, but kids are born into like iPad at 2 years old and this and that.
Yeah.
Do you think we're going to evolve into this? Do you think it's going to really wreak havoc on us in the long run? Like, what do you think? Do you have an opinion on how we're being affected right now? It's just this, I feel like it's some sort of experiment.
Yeah. I think, first off, I think the closer someone is to the inner bubble of companies, like the inner executive bubbles of companies like Facebook or Apple or anything, the less technology they allow in their homes. Like, so I think you hear from so many executives who worked in the attention economy at the highest levels, and they don't let their kids have any access to any technology. Bill Gates is famous for not allowing his kids to access a phone or a tablet before the age of 16 or 17.
But like, don't you think they're going to be so far behind the programming world? Maybe he just doesn't want them in there. Maybe he's got so much money that they don't need to get a job in computer technology.
Maybe it's kind of that's a classic thought, and it's possible. I won't even speak to whether that's good or bad. What I was to say is that people who are closest to the action are so afraid of this shit, they won't let their kids touch it.
Yeah.
It's like, if you're a Coke dealer, you probably don't give your kids Coke. So I'll just put that aside. Like, and that's a pretty aggressive statement. So what I'll say, like, more clearly, I guess, about what I think about this is, we have one brain, and we hope that that brain will help us be able to focus on what's most important to us and achieve the level of quality of work we want to do. We want this brain to be able to be patient and compassionate with our partners and our families and our kids. We want this brain to make thoughtful decisions about our life. And all of that requires discipline, right? Mental and emotional discipline. And I think that when we're at the whim of the attention economy and the amount of distractions, and we're basically training our brain to do the opposite of what I just described. We're training our brain to seek instant gratification. We're training our brain to be constantly bored and anxious and impatient. And we're training our brain to never focus on anything for more than a few seconds. And so I think it's to me, it's a bit of a question of what are you trying to do with your life and how do you want to show up? Like, and if it's important to you to deliver at a high level in the work you're doing and to be a thoughtful, compassionate, disciplined human being, then you got to decide about whether you're going to how hard you want your life to be, basically, because the more you're allowing these, this sort of compulsive behavior into your life, the more it's bleeding into every other aspect. Cause we only have one brain. It's the same brain that is, you know, dying to know what the Bitcoin price is every 5 minutes. Is the same brain
what's that right now? I'm just kidding.
I don't know, but that's the same brain that is, you know, in an important meeting and has to have a thoughtful response to an important question. And you need to be able to think deeply rather than just spinning a reaction out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone's getting into meditation and all these things, and they're super important. But if you're doing that while you're checking your phone 4,000 times a day, you're pulling yourself in two opposite directions. So I just think it's really important to be just to contemplate that and think about what's important to you. I think the other major factor besides just quality of life and mental health, because I think you're right, it does cause more stress on the brain. Anxiety causes more anxiety. It's affecting sleep patterns. It's affecting your reactiveness and your mood and all these other things, right? So there's lots of mental health factors. I think when we zoom out a bit and we look at our society, the other thing that's happening is, and this was kind of inevitable, but that we're going through a crisis of truth and a crisis of of processing information and of understanding what's going on in the world. And the internet was supposed to be this, you know, big equalizer and give us all equal access to information. But what got layered onto the internet was all of these algorithm-based platforms and this attention economy that basically makes all of its money by keeping us convinced we should pay attention to Facebook or Instagram or whatever platform we're on at that time. And the way to do that isn't to provide us accurate, level-headed, thoughtful content. It's to show us that shit that's on fire, shit that enrages us, shit that scares us, and spins us into a spiral. Unfortunately, it's not like Facebook is trying to destroy democracy in the United States, but that's what it's doing, because the algorithm just naturally pulls people in opposite directions, pushes them into rabbit holes, gives them more and more extreme content because it keeps them engaged longer and Facebook makes more money. It's just, the bottom line is that's the business model that we're in.
Right? And I recently deleted my Twitter because I found that, I was meditating for an hour in the morning and then I'd stop and I'd go straight to my Twitter and it's like working out so I can eat more cheeseburgers.
Yeah. You know, that's a great analogy. That's a great analogy. Right?
So, and then I'd feel fried after 5 minutes of Twitter after an hour of meditation. I was like, okay, screw this. I'm deleting this. And you're right. It was I was so interested in finding out, okay, so these, and I'm not going to use any names, but this group of people is so convinced that this is the truth. Let me see why they're so convinced. And you go in this rabbit hole and it's like, wow, this is very compelling. Now let me go see the other side and try to see it really from their perspective. And when you look at that, it's like, holy shit. Like, for example, Donald Trump is the worst human being to ever live on planet Earth. And he's also the savior of mankind. And there's two people that believe that to be 100% true. And if you really spend enough time on either side, you'll believe it. And then your mind is like, I will never be able to verify this 100%. So delete, and I'm just going to live what I know, you know, and that goes true for almost everything. I realized in this last year has become absolutely polarizing. It's total extremes.
Well, yeah. Sorry, so you're right. Like, you have all the platforms and the social platforms and YouTube and these things, and they've basically built the best addictive technology ever, right? But unfortunately, what that's forced CNN and New York Times and all these other media outlets to do is play the same game. They're all in the same game. So headlines include the word shocking, scandal,
breaking,
bombshell, yeah, breaking, disaster, like just list of words that are horrible.
I even see people putting that on their Twitter now. Like, they're a news outlet. They're like, breaking, you know, like, yeah, I lost my tooth this morning.
I don't know how long it'll be before, you know, New York Times starts using like fire emojis in their titles and shit like that. Right.
It's going to happen. Yeah.
So, whatever so it works, just, right? All it does is it creates an environment where you have to be very, very careful about what you're reading. And I think what you're consuming, because you're consuming that energy. First of all, the brain is actually pretty malleable in terms of there's parts of your brain that you don't really have access to that you may think, you may be looking at an article going, this is horseshit. I kind of know this isn't real. Like, this person is making a bigger deal of this than it really is. But there's some part of your brain that's taking in that alarmist message.
If something gets repeated enough, you start believing it at a subconscious level.
Yeah, like, our brains work in a way, like, it's actually how our brains are designed, is that when we're around, and you know, if you're around a certain type of person a lot, you start to think a little bit like them. You just can't help it. You start
can't help it.
Yeah, you start to use expressions that they use and words they use and think like them. So
And to that point, so realizing it's so important for your own sanity and safety. It's, you know, the lens through which you view the world is highly determined by the people you follow on social media.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if you want to start being controlled by the people who are there, who are shaping this narrative of what the world is, you know, it's going to really affect your mental, physical, spiritual, emotional well-being, the same way the people you surround your physical self with are going to do the same thing. And for me, it was like, wait a minute, I do not want to be going, like, I think I'm getting the news here, and I think I'm like staying in touch with current events, but really it's shaping my worldview. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute.
And it's almost impossible. Like, it requires so much time and energy to do proper sense making in today's media environment that it's very difficult to get a clear signal on what's happening, because everything is either, like you say, you know, there's lots of things. I think Trump is a sad, narcissistic, just self-interested person who was just a real disaster in many ways, right? But he was also kind of a useless leader. So he really didn't do all that much in terms of like major bad things. He didn't start any new wars. He actually de-escalated war for the first time of any president in modern history. Like he actually didn't get that much done, you know? And yet people want to make him out to be this like very like super evil, super like he's got this big plan to take over the government. And sure, like some part of him thinks he's going to like somehow win the election by suing everybody and stuff, but he's actually kind of useless. And if the New York Times just stopped covering him for a month, he would have gone away years ago. He just would have stopped, because he's only doing it first out of self-interest, right? And out of for attention.
But he also hits that algorithm thing where, like, you make him look bad, people want to see that, you know.
New York Times made more money in the last 4 years than they have. Like, they are one of the wealthiest media outlets now, and they're like making the most profit. They have, make no mistake, the New York Times has, on some level, loved every minute of the last 4 years.
So yeah, do they really love Trump or do they hate Trump? Like, listen, they hate to love him, or they love to hate him, or whatever. However you want to say it.
When Trump was running for president back in 2015, 2016, I'm telling you, if the media outlets all got together and said, you know what, let's all just like fist bump and say, we're not going to cover Trump for the next 90 days. All the crazy stuff he's saying and doing on Twitter and stuff, and all the inflammatory things he's saying, we're just going to not cover any of it. Literally, Trump would have he would have dropped out. People wouldn't have been that interested. But when you create this sort of firestorm, and this person is evil, and look at all these things he's saying, it was kind of to your point earlier, you create the opposite as well. I kind of feel like in the universe, whenever you create one thing, you create the polar opposite of that thing. And so the more extreme that thing is, the more extreme the polar opposite thing that gets created. So, you know, all this rhetoric about how he was the, you know, worst person on the planet and all this stuff, And then you've got QAnon and like saying he's the best person on the planet, he's going to save the world, and that the Democrats are pedophiles and all this shit.
It's so crazy. And what I realized is that people are very good at making things either look believable, mm-hmm. or making things that are true look not true. Like it's so amazing how people can edit images, how they can take studies and interpret them in certain ways and create articles that look like they were done by a scientist. Like, and it's just like, where's the truth anymore? And your mind just starts really like,
this
how do you validate?
Era.
Yeah.
This is the era that we're in. And so like, I think, you know, I think people sometimes misconstrue my position on this stuff, like in saying, you know, all technology is bad. And it's not true. Like, technology is really powerful and there's lots of benefits to it. And we do, social networks are a fantastic idea. If they were done properly. And I would actually say that Twitter is trying harder than most to not be so algorithmically manipulating, where it's like, you can follow 1,000 people on Instagram, but it's only going to show you about 25 of those, yeah. based on what it thinks will get you to interact with it most. And like, I don't follow any babes on Instagram, but if I go to the search field, because I don't really use the search function on Instagram. Like, a lot of people use it to find.
For me, it's the same thing. It's all girls. It's all girls. Babes.
Is that what you see too?
Exactly. Like, it's so funny. I was thinking the other day, I was like,
I showed my wife. I was like, I promise, I've never searched for women on Instagram in my whole life. Like, and this is so weird. And
then I was thinking the same thing. I guess my demographic, my age, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I go to look up a friend, and I see this whole feed of hot women. And you know what? Like, of course I'm a man. It's like, that is incredibly hard not to click on and distract me. And
another dopamine dealer hiding in the framework. Well, just ready
it's
to
like opening
grab
the
you.
Coat. It's like, want a free try? Like, come on, you know? So anyway, all that's happening, but I think there's a way forward. And like, we just need better platforms. And we also just need to upgrade how we, like, our understanding of how the platforms are working.
I think that's where you hit the nail on the head. We'll bring it back. Is that I think it's one, having the awareness that you have the power to sort of turn that off. You have the power to sort of decide where you want to put your attention. And it's hard, like the same way that people get addicted to certain like drugs and stuff like that, where no one wants to get addicted to heroin or cocaine. It sort of happens, and then it becomes this crutch that it's hard to sort of get out of after. And the same thing here is like, you know, but where how you can sort of get sucked into that. And there's probably other underlying reasons why some people get more addicted than others, as an escape or whatever is going on in their life. But it's very empowering to say, hey, I can just delete this, and I can sort of focus my energy on something else and go through the withdrawal mm-hmm. symptoms of not having Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Or just
manage it better, right?
Manage it, be intentional. Like, set time blocks for yourself. Use the built-in technology of the iPhone to limit the amount of minutes per day you get on these platforms. Choose who you follow. Choose intentional times of day when it's my Instagram break for the day. It's my Instagram block of the day. I have 20 minutes where I'm going to go check to see what people are up to and do that thing. There's lots of ways to use it. Like, I'm on Instagram and I don't really use it much personally, but I do use it to talk about what I'm excited about and passionate about and sharing parts. And my mom follows me on Instagram, so she sees part of my life. Like, there's these things are not inherent. Well, I would say that the Facebook empire is inherently evil, but I would not say the idea of having social networks is not inherently evil. But I also think we're also just entering an era, and what's coming next is there's already technology now and propaganda. Like, Russia is at war with the United States and vice versa. China is at war with the United States and vice versa. These wars have been going on for a number of years. Russia just completed the most aggressive cyber attack on America that anyone has ever done on anybody. And it's barely getting headlines. And they basically just hacked 400 of the top 500 companies in the United States and virtually every single branch of the US government. And the hack is so deep that they don't even know where it is. They don't know the basic remedy to get rid of this hack is to rebuild the entire server platforms for all of these institutions and companies from the ground up, from zero. And like, the cost of that is in the trillions of dollars. So, and no one's really talking about this, but like, this is the era we are in. And then we're also in the era of Russia, you know, and the States, like everybody massive, you know, using massive disinformation campaigns to confuse, to disorient, to push agendas, to do these things. And now the technology is getting better and better. So now we have AI empowered blog writing. So an AI can pump out thousands of blog articles about random topics that you program into it and publish them across thousands of fake websites. Like, I think like 30 or 40% more fake websites were clicked on in the 2016 election than real websites. Like, far more links on Facebook were fake than real, and even more links were clicked on than real in that election, right? And that's because Russia was working working overtime to confuse people and to push people towards Trump, who they knew was inept and would be a great, you know, would be a great deal for Russia for a few years. So we're in this era. The next thing that's coming and that's about to be basically cheap or free to use is deep fake technology, where you can effectively create a 100% real looking video of a human talking, and it's not them and it's not what they said. So there's great examples on the internet of, you know, people have made Obama videos where he's talking about random topics, or you can see all this. If you go look up the deep fake technology, it's unbelievable what you can do now with that. So you can effectively now create videos of people saying things they never said. So now video is like within the next couple of years, video is no longer a source of truth anymore, right? Audio already isn't. Like, I edit my blog, my podcast with this tool called Descript, and it basically, you can train it with your voice, and then you can change phrases that you said, and it uses an AI to replicate your voice and replace words and phrases that you said.
Yeah, I even heard there's AI that can now read your work and learn the way you write and think and create articles based on your previous work that sounds.
That's what I'm saying. That's what Russia and probably the US and China and lots of people are using to create so much, like a flood of content that sounds like it was written by a human, but is just a bunch of AI bullshit about whatever topic that they want to propagate. Mm-hmm. But then the deep fake stuff comes in. And then within a decade, the other thing that's going to happen is that special effects technology is going to be so cheap or free that, like, even today, you can do better special effects for almost nothing than you could 5 years ago, like Marvel movies and stuff like that you could do for tens and hundreds of millions of dollars. So all these things are taking us to a place where we are, you know, the internet is just pushing us to a world where we're getting to a place of post-truth, which I think helps us break through to a new level of consciousness. But we have to collectively, as a civilization, as individuals, we need to start upgrading our awareness and our ability to sense make and our ability to see that reality isn't as finite or as concrete as we would ever have imagined, right? Mm-hmm. We just need to, like, this to me is what is happening. This is where we are going. This is what the singularity actually is. It's not an AI computer one day just becoming super intelligent and wiping us all out or doing something crazy. It's a collective movement towards a new level of a new sense of what reality is, right? Where, you know, more and more people are living virtually. There's less and less ability to fragment or to make sense of the truth. And therefore, something new has to emerge, a new way of thinking, a new way of interacting, a new reality has to emerge.
Yeah, absolutely. So mind-boggling when you think about all of these things that are coming out.
It is.
And what that's going to do to the human mind and trying to make sense of reality. Like, I think it's literally people, they already are losing their minds right now with just losing grip of what's real and what's not and trying to make sense.
And what is real? Like,
and then it comes to the more existential questions. And then the other things that both of us are into, where you start, you know, the same reason you walk away from the type of work that you're doing, because you realize like, hey, there's no real, you can't really win this game of just overworking, trying to make as much money as possible, because there's more to life than that. You know, it's not just about 100%. What I was told was supposed to be the end game of just working, making money, and then I'm going to make something, I'm going to get somewhere. And maybe it's, this is the way it's designed, Steve, it's to like push people so far in one direction where they realize like, hey, I need to start focusing my energy on things that are more important than trying to figure out what the truth is behind whatever.
I don't know. You might be seeing this too. I'm definitely seeing this with a lot of my friends. We're getting into our 40s. We've, you know, especially those who have, you know, had a good, like had some good success. And there's definitely a question of, you know, what's the actual point here? Like what are we really doing here? You know, like, I think you're right. There is a natural evolution where you're in your 20s, you want to hustle, you want to build something, you got, it's a lot about like trying to change the world, or it's about external goals. And even in through your 30s, you're building things and it's about external success. And at some point, if you evolve, you start to say, well, what does internal success look like? What am I going to look back on and actually really be grateful for in my life? And what will lead me to having better days every day? Is it more money? Is it working harder? Is it being, you know, or is it actually finding a better balance and getting some hobbies and spending more time with the people I love and building a better relationship with my goals and ambition, you know?
Sometimes you got to be brought close to that edge to see that, you know, you got to get close, you know, where you can look back and see, exactly. And for me this year was like, I don't know what happened, but I started doing this hour and more every morning meditation, just 1 hour sits. And within a couple of weeks, I didn't care so much about what was going on in politics and around the world and social media. And I was like, I just realized one morning, I was like, I don't need this in my life. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. That's a beautiful realization.
It was just like, gone. And it's the more days that go by, I keep deleting more and more social media apps and things that are like, hey, this doesn't matter so much than what's already right in front of me. And, you know, the things that I'm interested in bringing into the world or being a part of, whether it's serving people, whether it's creating things that I'm passionate about and not for any sort of superficial goals. Cause before it was like, there was still this lure about success and stuff like that. And I sort of got away from that. And to be honest, the more I stopped focusing on it, I was getting abundance in other ways in my life, which was quite interesting. Mm-hmm. And now it's more like, hey, where's my mental space being held up all these days, trying to figure out the answers to all these things that are not that important? Or, you know, can I just be more present to the things that are right in front of me that matter? Mm-hmm. And it's a constant exploration of figuring out. And I'm just super grateful that I'm still going down that path. And you think you're sort of somewhere, and then you realize like there's always more doors to open and to explore and discover.
Yeah, it is. It's a fun life when you start realizing that all there is new doors and things to discover, right?
And it's a bit about doing less, you know, and I think this ties right into what you're doing. And just a couple of questions I had written down from before, and we can wrap up, was about, you know, do we create more space in our schedule to add more things into it? Or do we create more space to get the things done and have more space to balance ourselves out, have more downtime, have more reflection time? Because, you know, you mentioned you have halfway through Thursday, you're done your week's task. So are you going to pile on more stuff for the rest of Thursday and Friday? Or are you now going to be like, I've created space, now I can do less and have more balance?
So, yeah, like that's such a key question. Before we, that's fine. I'll answer this question. I think that one of the great, first off, for me, one of the great pleasures I have is when I have space to think, is when I get to go for walks with my dog in the woods. I do some construction projects around my property, I find those are doing physical tasks is a great time where my mind can kind of wander and I'm hammering nails and I'm sort of just thinking about things or doing chores and thinking about things. And that time is super important. And when I rebuilt my calendar for January, a thing I built in was, I just call it wandering time. Like every day I need to get out for at least an hour and wander. And I need to think about the big picture of the work I'm doing. I think if you're a leader or I think in most knowledge economy jobs and roles, you're being paid for the quality of your thinking, right? Obviously, also you're being paid for two things: the quality of your thinking, like your creativity, your ideas, your problem solving, your communication, and then the second piece is you're being paid for your ability to deliver, your ability to take that thinking and convert that into products or ideas, packaging that and delivering that. And I think if you're not taking any time to just space out and think about things and reflect on the bigger picture, then you're missing a whole aspect of what work really is. If you want to move up in your career, and if you want to be a leader, and if you want to develop important things. So I think that's one thing that's super key. But two, your question about like, do you just pile more stuff on? The answer is no, not at all. And part of the reason for that is that when you start to actually say, this is what a reasonable amount of work, this moves the needle for me this week, these are the things I'm going to get done, and then you get them done, you feel different about your work. You feel different. You have a different emotional reaction to your work. You have less stress. You have less, you're less sort of panicked about what's around the corner or what are you missing, because you're spending enough time to just say, this is what I needed to get done this week. I just got it done. Now I'm going to take that time and I'm going to diversify my life. I'm going to diversify my life by spending time with my family, or I'm going to diversify my life by picking up a hobby. Like I basically went from one company, which I sold last year, to now two ventures, and I'm on three advisory boards and two other nonprofit boards, and I'm putting out like multiple albums this year, like as a musician, and breathwork albums and all this. I'm making all this music again for the first time in 10, 15 years. And so when I wrap up my work on a Thursday, it's like, sweet, I guess I'm having a music day on Friday, you know? And that's like a very rewarding week when I look back on it. And I go into the weekend feeling relaxed and not like I just peaked out at 100 for 5 days. And now I spend the whole weekend just trying to recuperate from that. I get 8 to 9 hours of sleep every night. I get outside every day. You know, I have diversity in my life. And that to me, for me, is where joy comes from. And it's different for everybody. I think it's a decision to make. I think when you're 25 and you're building your first company and you're not married, and it's like, yeah, you probably want to work till 9 o'clock at night every night. I don't know that that's actually the way to get the most done, or to think the clearest, or to be the smartest entrepreneur you can be. Like that, you know, that's a different question. But your choices about diversity might be a little different. You also have the healthiest and strongest body you're going to have for the rest of your life. So you should get out and do some shit with that body and have some fun, right? And go traveling. And, you know, I just think diversity is super important for quality of life. So that's what you do when you create space. Nice. In my opinion. Nice. Anyway.
Yeah. That's a great answer. And then I guess the last couple questions, around meditation. So do you think, you know, again, like, I guess the cheeseburger, working out to eat cheeseburgers, it's like, hey, I can stress myself out as long as I get my meditation. I'm going to sort of allow myself to catch up a little bit more. Does it work like that, where, you know, I can do a 12-hour workday as long as I get 3 hours of meditation on top? Or it doesn't work so much as, you know, once you do too much and your mind is all over the place, it's better to just rewind all of that.
I just don't think, I think there's always moments where you just need to have a crazy work day. You've got some big thing that's just about to launch, or some, you know, there's exceptions to every rule, but I just don't see why anybody needs to work 12 hours a day. And I would never have said that 5 years ago. The more I get smart about how I work, the more I follow the system that we teach in Nature of Work, the more I keep my meditation and my personal wellness and my saunas and my forest walks up, the less time everything takes me. The more focused and disciplined I am in how I structure my time. I always say to people who go through our program is that if you can get 3 hours of uninterrupted work per day, you can get what most people do in 9-10 hours done in that 3 hours. You do right. not need to work 9-10 hours. The only reason we think we're so busy is because we're breaking our work up into these 5 to 10 minute chunks, and we're not clear on what our priorities are, and our brain is not conditioned to focus, and we're running at a stress level because we're not taking breaks and we're not breathing fresh air and we're not diversifying our activities. So we're just working stupid. And that's why we work 12-hour days. Like, even when you go to Vipassana and things like that, Vipassana retreats or something like that, and you might see this when you're meditating for an hour, you might actually need a little less sleep. Like, it's like your whole mental system, your whole system gets a little more efficient mm-hmm. when you're just tuning it in, you're just dialing it in. So I don't know. I think when you say you don't have time for meditation or you don't have time for sleep, it just means you're working backwards. You're just not working intelligently. I don't know. I just don't believe that there's any reason why somebody needs to work
that much.
12 hours. Yeah.
And what about performance enhancing drugs, AKA coffee? Is it worthwhile? Does it make things worse? I remember seeing that spider sort of picture, that study where they were feeding spiders different psychedelics and LSD. They'd make a beautiful web, and the coffee was just like all over the place. And that sort of stuck in my head, is like, okay, is coffee really helping, or is it making us like?
That's so funny. I forgot about that study, or that I remember seeing the photo of the spider web on caffeine. I personally don't drink any caffeine anymore. And when I do, I find that, like, I think I used to really think of it as it's going to ramp me up and get me super focused. I actually just find that it makes it harder to focus because it just increases the sort of energy intensity in the brain. It makes you sort of twitchy. And what I find is, so that's for me personally. I also find that I'm just far less anxious. I sleep better. My energy in the morning is super, super high. I don't have energy lulls anymore. I don't really need to nap anymore. I used to nap every day in the afternoon, just short power naps. I don't really need to do that anymore. So for me, I operate way more clearly with no coffee. And and I use it very sparingly as an enjoyable drug. Like, I think is how it should be treated. It's a very strong drug. Like, when you don't drink coffee,
I know.
If I drank a 12 ounce full bore coffee, I would be sweating profusely. I would be anxious. I would be like probably grinding my teeth a little bit. Like, it's intense, man. It's the same thing as if you don't smoke cannabis. Like, if you smoke cannabis all the time, you kind of level it out a bit. But if you don't smoke cannabis and you smoke a strong joint, like, you're gone. Like, you're blown out. I did that the other day with my good buddy, Dan Sutton, who runs Tantalus Labs. And I just wanted to smoke his weed because he's so passionate about his weed. He grows beautiful product. And I made such a critical error by smoking that whole joint with him. I was completely useless. But anyway, that's my take on coffee. I think for different people, it's different things. However, I would suggest that anybody who spends, if you can go 3-4 weeks without coffee, I think it's hard. I'm hard pressed to see why you'd ever go back. Yeah. That's my personal experience.
Yeah. Amazing. All right. Well, we're already over an hour here, so let's just wrap it up. So what's one thing, and I wanted to speak about Enfold, but I think we can do another call in the future focus on that, because I think that's a whole conversation we can spend an hour on in itself. Yeah. So if someone just wanted one, your number one tip for people starting out, wanting to just take a little bit more control of their mind space or head space, what's the first thing you'd recommend to do for someone who feels like they're not getting enough out of their day, or they're spinning on empty and all these things we talked about?
I would say design the first 15 minutes of your day from the moment you wake up. And the number one point there is that you're technology free for the first 15 minutes. No phone, no internet for the first 15 minutes of your day.
Nice.
And okay. it's a huge difference when you don't start your day in a information panic, whether that's email, Slack, social media, news feeds, whatever. It changes the tone of the whole day.
Awesome. Okay, so where can people find you if they're interested in Nature of Work, They want to try your online course. Speak a little bit about that before you go. Like what can they expect at Nature of Work, and where can they sign up and get more information?
Yeah, dope. Nature of Work is natureofwork.co. And basically we have a few different offerings. You can go through the program on demand, which means you just go through it on your own time. Or you can go through it with a cohort. The cohorts start every month. Right now we're running two different types of cohort. One is like a general cohort for anybody who wants to join, and one is specifically for founders and entrepreneurs. And so if you're a founder and entrepreneur, this is like a group of your peers who are going through the same, you know, challenges that you are. And those have been really fun to kick off and launch. Then one other thing we're launching next week, and they're free to join, is these things we're calling flow state sessions. And these are basically 2-hour deep focus sessions that are facilitated by me or one of our coaches. And basically, like, you come in with, you set a goal for yourself. We do a breathwork priming exercise to get you in the zone. We do some deep work sprints. We break it up with some movement in between. You get a ton of shit done. You're kind of like in a group environment and everyone's hustling, right? And everyone's focused. And so you have that added sort of social pressure and facilitation and support. And these are free to join. We run them every Wednesday, not every Wednesday, every second Wednesday, starting next week. So you can check that out on our website, natureofwork.co/flow. Those are free to join. So you should come check one of those out.
Awesome.
You can find me everywhere on the internet by at Steve Rio, or just search for Steve Rio.
Cool. Well, Steve, thank you so much for spending the time and sharing some of your valuable wisdom and knowledge. And I highly recommend checking out Nature of Work. I've done it, both the cohort and the online program. I loved it. I'm going to double down after this call starting next week. I've already started the process, but really going to double down now. Just because there's so much value in getting more out of your days.
And honestly, I definitely have a lot of people go through the program multiple times, including myself, but you know, a lot of people go through it every 6 months or just revisit the content, because there's so much there that there's always something new for you when you go back. So highly recommend it. Always.
All right. Time. All right.
Work is a practice, man. It's an ongoing.
Absolutely.
Thanks, man. This has been fun.
Yeah. And thanks everyone for listening. You know, please like, share, check out Steve's work, and we'll see you soon, guys. Peace. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate you, man.